Welcome to the deep dive.
Oh, yeah.
Today, what? We're strapping on our helmets and diving headfirst into the wild world of the new Ogham Blood Bowl League.
Okay.
We've got spreadsheets packed with data covering multiple seasons, even tracking the evolution from Blood Bowl 2 to its successor, Blood Bowl 3, or BB2 and BB3, as we'll call them.
Makes sense.
Think fantasy football meets brutal gladiatorial combat with orcs, elves, and a whole lot of mayhem.
Yeah. So what's really cool here is we're not just talking about like a single tournament or anything like that.
Yeah.
The new Ogham League is persistent, meaning it spans numerous seasons with dedicated coaches and players.
Yep.
The data we have here covers season 4 through Akeza. So you're getting like a really long view.
Okay.
Look at how this league has evolved.
So that's right. We're talking years of rivalries, triumphs, and maybe even a few broken bones. Hopefully just metaphorical ones.
Hopefully metaphorical.
So where do we even begin to unpack all of this?
Oh.
Yeah.
I think a good place to start is with the structure of the league itself.
Okay.
It's not just a chaotic free-for-all.
Right.
Most seasons are divided into Division 1 and Division 2.
Okay.
Implying a competitive hierarchy.
Oh.
And likely a promotion relegation system.
So you got dedicated players, long seasons, and a division system.
Yeah.
It sounds like a real-world sports league.
Totally.
Just with a bit more fantastical flair.
A little more fantastical.
Yeah. Now, speaking of fantastical.
Yes.
Let's talk about the...
Let's get into it.
Teams and coaches who bring this league to life.
Yeah.
You got to love some of these team names.
Some of these team names are great.
Yeah.
Some coaches definitely lean into the creative side. Take Seducers of Slaanesh, for example.
Why?
A chaos team with the blunt description of F you.
All right.
Gives you a sense of their personality right there.
So.
Yeah. And then there's the more whimsically named Kindergarten Nightmares. A necromantic team.
Oh,
you can just imagine those undead players shuffling onto the field.
Ooh, necromantic teams.
Yeah.
Always bring a unique flavor to
the game. Yeah, totally.
I wonder how their reliance on undead players affects their performance.
We're going to see.
But wait, there's more. We've also got the Gene Simmons Bards.
Okay.
A vampire team.
Right.
A fun little pop culture reference there.
I like it.
And last but not least, End of Mankind.
Oh.
A Nurgle team.
All right.
Now, Nurgle teams, with their focus on disease and decay, are notoriously tough to take down.
They are.
They're less about flashy plays.
Right.
And more about slowly wearing down the opponent, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You're likely to see a more resilient, potentially controversial style of play.
Okay.
For them.
And it's intriguing that certain coaches seem drawn to...
Yeah, it is interesting.
...specific races, play styles.
Yeah. Oh.
Absolutely.
For sure.
It makes you wonder if there's a psychological aspect to team selection.
Like, do they identify with the race
and
the play style?
Are there any coaches who appear consistently across multiple seasons and divisions?
Yeah, there are.
The true veterans of new Ogham, so to speak.
Yeah, the veterans of new Ogham.
Yeah.
Several names stand out.
Okay.
One is Jay Jape.
Yeah, okay.
They coach both the Shiva Blitzers, a Wood Elf team.
Okay.
And Cheese Is Not a Lie.
Okay.
An Underworld team.
Interesting.
This could indicate a preference for agile teams that rely on speed and finesse.
Interesting. So we might see J-Jape's signature style reflected across different races.
Yeah, exactly.
Adapting to their strengths.
Totally.
Who else caught your eye?
Philadius is another interesting one.
Okay.
They lead the End of Mankind Nurgle team we mentioned earlier.
Right.
Given Nurgle's reputation for resilience and, shall we say, unconventional tactics. Philadius might be a coach who really pushes the boundaries of the game.
Okay.
Solin Noir is another one to watch, leading the Shadow Rangers.
Okay.
A classic Dark Elf team.
Right.
Known for their speed and aggression.
Ah. So Solin Noir might favor a high-risk, high-reward approach.
Yeah. Definitely.
Always going for the big play.
Possibly.
Are there any coaches who seem particularly adaptable, bouncing between very different team types?
Hatebreed seems to fit that bill.
Okay.
They appear with a variety of teams.
Oh, wow.
Across the data.
Okay.
Including the Pittsburgh Ringers.
Okay.
A Dark Elf team. as well as teams with very different play styles.
Wow.
This suggests a deep understanding of different races right. and the ability to tailor strategies accordingly.
It's like they're fluent in the language.
Yeah.
Every team able to bring out the best or worst,
yeah.
depending on the opponent.
Yeah.
Now, all this talk about teams and coaches is great.
Right.
But what about the players themselves?
Yeah.
The data doesn't stop at the team level, does it?
You're absolutely right. It goes all the way down
oh, wow.
to player-specific statistics, cool. allowing us to highlight individual performances
all right.
and really bring those spreadsheet numbers to life.
That's what I love about this kind of deep dive.
Yeah.
We get to celebrate
right.
those unsung heroes or villains yeah. of the gridiron.
It's cool to see the individuals.
Yeah. Tell me,
yeah.
who are some of the standout players that caught your eye?
Well, in season 8,
okay.
Division 2,
right.
we have Prayer Daisy Cutter 2,
okay.
an orc on Chartreuse's Monks team.
All right.
What's remarkable is they lead in both
wow.
matches played and experience.
Wow. So this orc has seen it all.
They've been around.
A true veteran of the pitch.
Definitely.
Maybe a consistent workhorse who anchors the team.
Yeah, could be.
Then there's Uller 57
okay.
on the Kikup Kaz Tizen's FBTTI, another orc team.
Another orc team.
This player leads in inflicted catches.
Oh, really?
For the season.
Ha. Huh.
This could suggest a real mastery of receiving.
Yeah, defying those assumptions
yeah.
about orcs just being all about brute force.
So we've got a veteran workhorse
uh-huh.
and a master receiver.
Yeah.
Both orcs.
Wow.
Who else makes the highlight reel?
Well, how about yeah. Count Ace Frehley,
okay.
a vampire on the uh-huh. Gene Simmons Bards team.
Okay.
This player frequently appears high in inflicted knockouts.
Now, that's a name that lives up to the hype.
Yeah, right.
A star player with a powerful presence on the field. I bet they're a real crowd pleaser, living up to that rock star name.
They do bring the flair.
Yeah.
And these individual stories,
yeah.
these moments of brilliance or brutality
right.
are what really make this league come alive.
Yeah.
But before we get too caught up
yeah.
in individual narratives,
okay.
let's talk about the statistical categories themselves.
Right. It's not just about touchdowns, is it?
No, it's not.
What else are we tracking here?
The data goes deep.
Okay.
Tracking experience, casualties,
oh,
catches, nice. Touchdowns, meters running and passing, and more.
Oh.
This tells us the league values, both individual skill and team performance.
Right.
Emphasizing both offense and defense.
It's like they're trying to capture
yeah.
every nuance of the game.
Yeah.
From calculated plays to bone-crunching tackles.
Exactly.
But does this data tell us anything?
Yeah, good question.
About the different races and their play styles?
I think so.
Are certain races overrepresented in particular stats?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
If we see, for example,
yeah.
elves dominating passing stats,
right.
it would reinforce their reputation
yeah.
for agility and finesse.
Right.
Conversely, if orcs lead in casualties,
oh.
well, that might point to a more direct approach,
yeah.
wouldn't you say?
It seems like we're just scratching the surface
yes.
of what this data can tell us.
For sure.
But before we go any further,
okay.
let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Sounds good.
To dive into some specific matches.
Okay.
And see what stories they reveal.
Awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I love a good story.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah.
Me too. All right. We're back and ready to dig into some actual match data.
Okay.
Each match is like a little story waiting to be told.
It is.
A clash of personalities, strategies, and maybe a few lucky dice rolls.
Absolutely. And the data we have lets us relive these clashes
yeah.
and maybe even pick up a few coaching tips along the way.
I like it.
Let's start with season 4.
Okay.
The earliest data we have in Division 1.
Okay.
We have Ant-Man coaching the Love Lizards.
Right.
A Lizardmen team.
Okay.
They went up against Renus and their Chaos team.
Okay.
The Seducers of Slaanesh.
Oh, yeah.
Pulling off a 2-0 victory.
So right away, we see that classic matchup.
Yeah.
Lizardmen, known for their strength and resilience,
uh-huh.
going toe-to-toe with Chaos.
Right.
Infamous for their unpredictable and often brutal play style.
Totally.
What's fascinating is the Love Lizards managed a complete shutout
yeah.
against a team known for its offensive power.
You're right to highlight that shutout.
Yeah.
It suggests a very strong defensive strategy on Ant-Man's part.
Yeah.
Perhaps they capitalized on the Lizardmen's superior armor
right.
and positioning, denying the Chaos players any scoring opportunities.
It's like they weathered the storm of chaos
yeah.
and countered with a carefully planned defense.
That's a good way to put it.
I'm starting to see how these match results give us a real glimpse into coaching styles.
Yeah.
What other season four matches stand out to you?
Well, there's another Division One match where JRCO coaching the Ork City Bengals squared off against Philadius.
Okay.
And their Nurgle Team Heroes Association.
Orcs versus Nurgle. That's got to be a real slugfest, a battle of attrition.
It is.
Who came out on top?
It was a close one. Okay. But JRCO's Bengals managed to eke out a 1-0 victory. So and remember, Nurgle teams are built to endure.
Right.
They grind down the opponent slowly.
Yeah.
So for JRCO to not only score,
right,
but also prevent Philadius from equalizing,
yeah,
suggests a very targeted strategy.
Maybe they focused on disrupting that slow, methodical Nurgle advance, preventing them from getting any momentum going.
Could be.
It makes you wonder if JRCO had studied Philadius's past matches, looking for weaknesses to exploit.
You're thinking like a coach already.
I tried.
Always good to learn from the best, even if it's through their defeats.
Sorry.
But let's fast forward to season V, where the data gets even juicier. We have a rematch between Ant-Man's Love Lizards and Renus's Seducers of Slaanesh.
Ooh, a rematch.
Rematch.
So did the Love Lizards maintain their defensive dominance?
This time, the Seducers turn the tables with a 2-1 win.
Yeah.
This is a great example of how even the most dominant teams can face setbacks.
Right.
Blood Bowl has that element of chance, right?
Yeah.
A few bad dice rolls.
Yeah.
A lucky bounce of the ball.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly the tide turns.
It keeps things unpredictable, for sure. Any other Season V matches that you think our listeners should know about?
Antituros.
Okay.
Coaching the High Elf team, Black Crying Ravens, faced JRCO's Ork City Bengals in a match that ended 2-0 in favor of the Ravens.
So in this case, the High Elves, known for their speed and agility, outmaneuvered the typically brawny Orcs.
Uh-huh.
Does this tell us anything about these coaches?
It's possible Antituros favors a more finesse-oriented approach, really utilizing those High Elf speed and passing skills.
Yeah.
A stark contrast to the head-on bashing you might associate with Orcs.
Yeah.
It just goes to show the amazing variety of play styles you can find in this league.
And yeah, sometimes the most interesting matches are the ones with unexpected results.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
The underdog stories, the upsets, those are the ones you really remember.
Speaking of which,
any
big surprises jump out at you from the data?
Well, there's a particular match from Season V, Division 2 that caught my eye.
Right. What is it?
It involved Zeldorn,
the
coach of the Crazy Dogs.
All right.
A necromantic team.
Hold on. Undead dogs.
Undead dogs.
Oh, gads. That's a new one.
That's pretty wild.
I'm picturing a pack of skeletal hounds chasing down the ball.
Oh, yeah.
Who were they playing against?
They faced off against a Skaven team.
Okay.
Labrat's Revenge.
Uh-huh.
Coached by someone simply named R.
Ooh, intrigue.
Quite a mysterious coach.
So we have spooky undead dogs versus, well, whatever Labrat's Revenge looks like.
Right. We'll have to use our imaginations there.
What happened?
It was a low-scoring match,
okay,
typical of these teams, ending 1-0 in favor of the Crazy Dogs. Skaven are known for their speed and swarming tactics.
Yeah.
But Zeldorn's necromantic team managed to pull out a victory.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
It seems like Zeldorn might have utilized some classic necromantic tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Tough defense, waiting for the right moment.
Right.
Then striking when the opponent is weakest.
Yeah.
A bit like a chess game, wearing down the opponent with slow, deliberate moves.
I like that analogy.
Yeah.
But remember, we were talking about coaches potentially specializing in certain races.
Uh-huh.
Well, let's see if that holds up as we look at more data.
Yeah, let's put that theory to the test.
Right.
What are we looking at?
In Season V, Division 2,
all right,
J-Jape is back with their Wood Elf team, Shiva Blitzers.
Okay.
This time they played against HUD, coaching the Green Tide Mark team.
So we've got J-Jape sticking with the Agile Elves.
Uh-huh.
While HUD is going for the classic Orc powerhouse.
Yeah, classic matchup.
Was J-Jape able to utilize that speed and finesse against the Orcs?
They were indeed.
Wow.
The Shiva Blitzers won with a score of 2-0, suggesting J-Jape's affinity for those agile teams might be paying off consistently.
Yeah, it seems HUD's Orcs might have struggled to keep up.
Yeah, that might.
With the L's speed and passing game.
Could be.
we're starting to see some real patterns emerge here.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like watching a coach develop their signature style over time, refining their strategies and learning how to counter their opponents.
That's what it's all about.
Now, are there any other coaches who seem to be doubling down on their preferred races?
Let's jump ahead to season 12.
Okay.
Where we find Philidaeus.
Okay.
Our Nurgle specialist, coaching end of mankind in Division 1.
All right, back to those resilient,
yeah,
disease-ridden warriors.
Yeah, right back to them.
Who did they go up against this time?
They had a match against Paulery,
okay,
who was coaching the Dwarfs of New Ogham,
right,
a
right.
dwarf team.
Ooh, now that's an interesting matchup.
It is.
You've got the immovable object versus the unstoppable force.
Right.
I'm on the edge of my seat here.
Oh, no, me too. This is a good one.
Who won?
In this case,
yeah,
the immovable object triumphed.
Sorry.
The Dwarfs took home the win with a score of 1-0.
So even Nurgle's resilience has its limits.
It does.
It seems those Dwarfs with their superior armor,
yeah,
and disciplined formations,
uh-huh,
were able to weather the storm of Nurgle's offense.
Yeah, it seems like Dwarves are known for their stubborn defense,
right,
and ability to control the pace of the game. That might be the perfect counter to Nurgle's slower grinding style.
It seems like Paulery really understands how to exploit the weaknesses,
yeah,
of his opponent's chosen race.
It does seem that way.
It really highlights the strategic depth of this league.
Yeah, for sure.
It's not just about picking the strongest team.
Right.
But about understanding the nuances of each race.
Exactly.
And knowing how to use them to your advantage.
You got it.
It's like a complex game of rock, paper, scissors.
It is.
Where each choice has its own strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, exactly.
The coaches who truly excel are the ones who can anticipate their opponent's moves,
uh-huh,
and counter them effectively.
Right.
It's like a mental battle as much as a physical one.
I like that.
But all this talk about strategy and tactics,
yeah,
we can't forget about the individual players,
yeah,
who are making these matches happen.
Absolutely.
Let's shift gears for a moment and highlight some standout player performances from these matches.
All right, let's give those star players the spotlight they deserve.
Yes. Back in season 4, okay, Division 1,
right,
we had Goot,
okay,
on Ant-Man's Love Lizards,
right,
racking up 2 inflicted casualties,
okay,
and 3 inflicted injuries,
right,
against Rannis' seducers of Slaanesh.
So Goot was a real menace on the field,
later,
dishing out pain and disrupting the seducers' game plan.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that even in a defensive battle,
yeah,
there are opportunities to be aggressive,
right,
and turn the tide.
Exactly.
And, you know, even in defeat, individual players can shine.
They can.
In that same match.
Yeah.
Thorax, on the seducer side.
Oh, yeah.
Inflicted 2 casualties and 7 injuries on the Love Lizards.
Talk about a sore loser.
Yeah.
Even in a loss, Thorax made his presence felt.
Yeah.
Really living up to Chaos's reputation for brutality.
But it's not always about brute force, is it?
No, it's not.
What about players who excelled in other areas of the game?
Well, in Season V,
okay,
Division 1.
Right.
Helbling D,
right,
on JRCO's Orc City Bengals.
Inflicted 2 casualties on Antiturus's Black Crying Ravens.
Okay.
Despite the Bengals ultimately losing that match.
So even though the team lost,
yeah,
Helbling D still made a significant impact, putting some hurt on those high elves.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds us that every player has a role to play.
For sure.
Every action can contribute to the outcome.
Yep.
What about on the high elf side?
Yeah.
Anyone stand out there?
Elder, on the Raven side, certainly had a good game,
okay,
inflicting 2 casualties and 6 injuries on the Bengals,
okay,
likely playing a key role in securing the victory for the Ravens.
A real game changer.
Yeah.
And it seems like those less glamorous positions,
yeah,
can also be crucial to a team's success.
They are.
Any examples of that?
Take Season V, Division 2,
okay,
where Bob, on Zeldorn's Crazy Dogs,
okay,
inflicted a casualty and 4 injuries,
okay,
against Ars Labrat's Revenge.
Right.
Remember, that was a very low-scoring match.
Yeah.
So every injury likely had a big impact.
So Bob, our necromantic player,
right,
might have been a key factor in that victory, even without scoring any touchdowns themselves.
It's possible.
Just goes to show, you don't always need the flashiest plays to be effective.
Right.
Sometimes it's about wearing down the opponent,
mm-hmm,
chipping away at their resources until they crumble.
Ah, a true necromantic approach.
Right.
But now, before we move on,
okay,
I'm curious about something.
Okay, what's that?
We've seen some repeat matchups between coaches.
Yeah.
Did any particular rivalries emerge from these matches?
Oh, that's a great question.
Any coaches who seemed to repeatedly clash?
Yeah.
Maybe developing a bit of a grudge match?
I can already picture the tension of the pregame trash talk. The coaches glaring at each other from across the pitch.
Oh, yeah.
It would definitely add another layer of excitement to the league.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the data definitely hints
at
some potential rivalries brewing.
Okay.
But we'll need to dive a bit deeper to confirm them. Maybe look for patterns in the results,
yeah.
The types of teams they favor, even the way the matches play out.
Ooh, the suspense is killing me.
I know.
But that's what makes it so fascinating, right?
Right.
It's not just about the numbers and statistics. It's about the stories they tell.
Yeah.
The rivalries they reveal. The history they bring to life.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like we're piecing together a puzzle.
Right.
Uncovering the hidden narratives of this league.
Yeah.
And the people who make it so captivating.
And we're not done yet.
No, we're not.
We still have to tackle that major transition.
Right.
From Blood Bowl 2 to Blood Bowl 3.
The big one.
That's a game changer in any league.
It is.
Are you ready to see how these coaches adapted to the new rules and mechanics?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Let's find out who thrived, who struggled,
okay.
and how the landscape of the new Ogham League shifted with the arrival of BB3.
All right, let's do it.
Stay tuned, folks, because things are about to get very interesting.
All right, we're back, and it's time to tackle that elephant in the room. The transition from Blood Bowl 2 to Blood Bowl 3, that's no small feat for a league like New Ogham.
Huh?
It's like switching from a trusty old playbook to a whole new game plan, all right?
It's a great analogy. Imagine switching from classic chess to a version with new pieces and movement roles. You'd have to completely rethink your strategies. That's what these coaches faced with the move to BB3. So let's see how they adapted. Season X 8th is our first glimpse into this new era, and there are some interesting results right off the bat. Remember Zeldorn, the coach of the Chartreuse's monks?
Oh yeah, the monks with their veteran orc prior Daisy Cutter too.
Mm-hmm.
They seem like a solid team in BB2. How did they fare in BB3?
Well, they faced Sagoza and their Chaos team.
Okay.
Les Sombres Regitants in Division 2.
Okay.
And they won that match against Sagoza's Chaos team with a score of 2-1.
So even against a traditionally strong Chaos team,
right.
Zeldorn's orcs adapted well to the new game.
It seems so. It
makes you wonder if they stuck to those classic orc strengths. Strength aggression, maybe a bit of headbutting.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe Zeldorn developed new strategies to take advantage of BB3's updated mechanics. It's fascinating to see how coaches adjusted to the changes. Take J-Jape, for example. Remember how they seemed to prefer those agile, finesse-oriented teams?
Of course. J-Jape and their Wood Elf team, Shiva Blitzers, really stood out in earlier seasons.
Yeah.
Did they carry that success over to DB3?
They certainly did. In Season 8, Division 2, they went head-to-head with Anti-Turos, who was coaching the High Elf team, Strong Arm of the Law.
Okay.
And get this, the Shiva Blitzers won 3-0.
Wow, a shutout against the High Elf team. That's impressive. It seems J-Jape's expertise with agility really translated well to BB3. Maybe they mastered those new passing mechanics or found creative ways to utilize the Wood Elf's speed to their advantage.
You're picking up on those key details. The fact that they shut out another elf team known for their finesse and agility is really telling. It suggests a real mastery of the nuances of BB3 and how to maximize those agile play styles. So we're seeing coaches like Zeldorn and J-Jape making a smooth transition and even carrying over their success from BB2. But as you might imagine, not everyone fared as well.
Oh no, did some coaches hit a snag with the changes? Who are we thinking about?
Well, Palladius and their Nurgle team, End of Mankind, seem to have faced some challenges. Remember how they dominated in BB2 with that resilient, attrition-based style?
Yeah, they were tough to beat. Did they lose their edge in BB3?
Well, they had a rematch against Paulery and his Dwarfs of New Ogham in Season X Division 2. And for the second season in a row, the Dwarfs won, this time with a score of 2-0.
Wow, another shutout victory for the Dwarfs against Nurgle. It seems like Paulery really has Philadius's number regardless of the game version. Do you think the changes in BB3 might not have favored that slower, more attrition-based Nurgle style? Or maybe Philadius is still adapting, working on new strategies for this version?
Those are excellent questions. It's possible certain races benefited more from the BB3 updates than others. We'd need to look at more data across different teams and matchups to really draw any conclusions about specific races. But it definitely raises the question of whether Philadius can reclaim their former glory in this new era.
It's like the whole new chapter of the new Ogham League has begun. Coaches are reevaluating their strategies, players are adjusting to new mechanics, and the race is on to master this evolved version of the game.
And speaking of the race, there are some interesting individual player stats in BB3 that I think are worth mentioning. For example, Alar 57 on Kikupka's Tuzis BTT, that orc team still leads in inflicted catches for the season.
So even in BB3, orcs can still be surprisingly adept at catching the ball.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all in those big green hands. It challenges those preconceived notions we might have about certain races and their playstyles. What about our star vampire, Count Ace Frehley? Do they make a splash in BB3 as well?
Oh, absolutely. Count Ace Frehley is still racking up the inflicted knockouts, living up to that rock star name. It seems some things never change, even with a new game version.
That's what's so exciting about this data. We're seeing the evolution of the league and its players in real time. There are so many questions that still need answers. Will Zeldorn's monks continue to dominate in BB3? Can Philadius adapt their Nurgle team to overcome these new challenges? Will new stars emerge and make their mark on the league?
This is just the beginning of the BB3 era in the new Agum League. There's a whole new chapter of history waiting to be written. It's like we've given you a map and a compass, and now it's your turn to explore.
That's right. You, our listener, are now equipped to dig even deeper into this data. Which coach's career will you follow? What team rivalry will you investigate? The answers are waiting to be discovered. Every number tells a story, and it's up to you to uncover its meaning.
So put on your analytical hats, fire up those spreadsheets, and get ready to uncover the hidden narratives of the new Agum Blood Bowl League. Who knows what incredible stories are waiting to be told.
And that's a wrap for this deep dive. We'll be back next week with a brand new set of data and a fresh exploration. Until then, happy analyzing.